The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Good morning. Welcome to the Trumpet Daily Radio Program. Your regular host, Stephen Fleury, has graciously allowed me to guest host his program today. My name is Andrew Locher. It has been quite a busy year. Looking back at 2019, hard to believe how quickly it has passed. I think we say that every year. But watching the Trumpet Daily Radio Program on Tuesday on YouTube and watching the news montage that was played really just was rather striking how many different things have taken place that you just kind of lose track of. Where would we be without understanding the significance of those events? I'm so thankful for this program, for the Key of David, the Trumpet Hour, all of our printed materials that we offer, not to mention all the other valuable programming on KPCG. Really, it is amazing to have understanding about what's taking place in the world around us. Well, yesterday, Mr. Stephen Fleury talked about the coming year, 2020. I guess we're into that now. And so shouldn't call it the coming year. But he talked about that it really should be a very explosive year with all that's prophesied to occur. It's going to be a big year for the Philadelphia Church of God. I thought this might be a good time to highlight with you some of the financial details from 2019 and as we look forward to 2020, what we're anxious to do. And I thought I'd share with you first some of our expenses, mostly costs from the United States, the operations here. But as I am able to, I'll interject some other regional office expenses that also contribute to the just the production of this great work. After I talk about some of the expenses, we'll also hit the highlights of the income. The Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily TV programs air all over the world. We contract with dozens of stations. We reach pretty much any place on the planet if you consider the internet as well as our broadcast reach. And Stephen Fleury and his father, Gerald Fleury, have been busy in the studios recording new programs. Programs are doing quite well right now. I thought it was kind of good to look back at since we bought Edstone just a few years ago. Stephen Fleury has taped 161 different episodes of the Trumpet Daily TV program. Gerald Fleury since 1993, when we first began producing Key of David television broadcasts, he's recorded 859 different episodes. We've been broadcasting the Key of David program for over 1,350 weeks. It's quite a bit more than that, actually, now. And so we continue to reach this world with prophetic understanding, with just a push toward Bible values, strengthening families, providing solutions to people's lives, and just really giving them a great understanding of what's taking place around them. In 2019, the Key of David program responses, just telephone calls in the United States and Canada, numbered over 77,500. That was down a little bit compared to 2018. In 2018, we had daily TV coverage in Chicago, which just kind of always took us by surprise with how many calls we got from that station. Now, they changed their programming lineup, and we lost our time there on that daily spot. We also went off WGN in 2017, and we had another national cable that we used in 2018. So with some of those changes, we did see a decrease in the total number of calls. It is a changing industry. I was just speaking with the director of one of the media agencies that we work with, and he said that all the religious programmers and really all programmers are kind of struggling with this evolving model of how people get their news, their entertainment, their religious programming. It used to be pretty simple with just a couple broadcast stations per nation. And then, of course, that expanded massively with cable TV and then satellite And then just the putting a video on the internet has really changed the landscape quite a bit. And so we work to try to find the most effective ways to reach people all over the world. We know that broadcast television still, in a lot of ways, is our most successful way of adding new subscribers. But when you look at podcast numbers, when you try to study how many people are watching on YouTube and for how long and other video platforms, it is quite a bit more difficult to quantify the response, the viewership. We can look at downloads, and there's just different ways of looking at things. Thankfully, we're not driven by numbers. We have a job to put this information out there. It's a wonderful responsibility. It's great not being driven by response statistics or anything like that. But of course, we do want to be as effective as we possibly can. Even with all of that said, with the changing landscape of how you get a message out there today, still in 2019, we spent $2.3 million on broadcast airtime. That's down about 5% from 2018. And with that, we were able to add over 32,000 new subscribers to the Trumpet magazine in 2019. That's quite a few new subscribers. But sadly, not as many people chose to renew or even cancel their subscription. In fact, those numbers actually slightly outpaced the new subscribers. Now, again, I think there's been quite a shift to our online offerings that's updated several times throughout the day. That's the first place you can get to our new literature. You find special videos that expand on some of our written material. So it is difficult to quantify things, but it does always remind me of the parable of the sower. Herbert Armstrong referred to this. It's in Matthew 13, if you have your Bible, if you wanted to follow along. I'll just read a few verses here. But Mr. Armstrong used this parable to explain how people respond to the gospel message. We do the same thing in how people respond to this warning message. In Matthew 13, verses 4 through 9, this is Jesus Christ speaking. He said, "And when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. Some fell upon stony places where they had not much earth, and forthwith they sprung up because they had no deepness of earth. And when the sun was dry, or excuse me, when the sun was up, they were scorched. And because they had no root, they withered away. Some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. But other fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, and some 30-fold. Christ says, "Who has ears, let him hear." It's important for us to think about the warning that Christ gives us here. Really, if you just study the passage here, and I'll talk about his explanation in just a moment, but this really is why we encourage you to follow along with your prayer, your study, to watch the programming, to stay involved, because Satan is out there trying to distract. Satan is out there trying to choke off this word. And so if you're not really investing a lot of time, you do risk losing some of what God has given you. Now, you might remember the story here. Jesus Christ spoke this parable. The disciples were a little bit frustrated because they were given a specific understanding from Christ at different times, and they were a little bit confused. Well, why don't you just tell them openly this good news message? And Christ, of course, told them that for the general public, by and large, it wasn't given to them to understand at that time. But for the disciples, they were intended to listen. And so Christ went on to explain what this parable meant. Now, when you think about this in terms of the gospel message or the warning message, it does really make sense. And it's very consistent with response to our program. We know from scriptures like John 6:44 that nobody comes into this truth of and by their own choosing. They're actually drawn to the message. They're drawn to Jesus Christ by invitation from the Father. Incidentally, we taped a Key of David program yesterday, a new program, and it was really a fascinating program. Mr. Gerald Fleury went through and talked about a lot of the basic doctrines of the church. We had a program that aired just last weekend. The title of that program is "The Bible is Christ in Print." The Bible is Christ in Print. And that program was just really basic. And yet the response was really impressive. And so I think you'll probably see a little more focus on some of the basic doctrines and teachings of the Bible, doctrines and teachings that are unique to God's true church. And yet those oftentimes do have a significant appeal to the general public. But then you have to factor in this parable of the sower. If you skip down to verses 18 through 23, still in Matthew chapter 13, Christ says, "Hear you therefore the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understands it not, then comes the wicked one, catches away that which was sown in his heart. That is he which received the seed by the wayside." And so as Mr. Armstrong speculated in the past, and I think he's spot on with this, probably 90% or more of the people that interact with the Key of David program, with his World Tomorrow program, with the periodicals or the websites, most of those come along and it's intriguing. They are really interesting stories that we produce, or the programming is fantastic, but they don't really understand. And so rather than digging in, Satan is able to come along and to catch them away, to just get them distracted, and they carry on with life. You know, Satan really fears the truth of God. And so I think when people sign up for the Trumpet magazine, when they listen to the program, when they visit our website, it's intriguing at first. But oftentimes, they just move on, or they choose not to renew their subscription. That is even complicated further. But as Christ points out here, verse 20 says, "He that received the seed into stony places, the same is he that hears the word and with joy receives it." A lot of our first-time contacts really like the message. Christ says, "Yet he has no root in himself, but does for a while, and when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, by and by he is offended." And so if somebody does manage to renew their subscription, or they hang on and become regular listeners or viewers of the program, well, persecution or tribulation, those are pretty strong words, but I think even in their lives, if it starts to conflict with their general understanding, a very basic command and doctrine of the church, like the Sabbath, keeping the Sabbath holy. That's something that conflicts with just about everybody in the world with their understanding of obedience. And so if they don't have much root in them, if they're not really willing to change their lives to obey God, well, then Satan is also able to kind of pull them off to the side as well. Verse 22 says, "He also that received the seed among the thorns is he that hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke off the word, and he becomes unfruitful." Now, this, I think, is really risky today, because as we talk about all the time, the United States, the British nations, even Judah in Israel, well, they're experiencing this temporary surge. There is great economic growth and activity. And so the deceitfulness of riches, the cares of this world are always there, put there by Satan, perhaps some of the distractions again, and people tend to let that choke off their interest in following through with God's truth. Verse 23 is the category that we need to be in. "He that receives the seed into good ground is he that hears the word and understands it, which also bears fruit and brings forth some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. See, it's a process. It's not just listening. It's acting on it. It's being interested in it. It's about devoting time in our day to prayer and study and really digging in. That's the response that we love to see. And it does happen, as I'll talk about here in a moment. We, of course, expect great results because the message resonates with us. But we know very few are called today, very few really understand and will act on the message right now. Gerald Fleury's book on Ezekiel makes this statement. He said, "God promises to make us the toughest Christians on earth. God will use us to deliver this difficult message, and he tells us in advance that Israel won't hear it. However, our message and their response is only stage one. It's not the end result. Stage two brings the great tribulation, when many of God's rebellious people and the nations of Israel repent. They will respond belatedly to the PCG's message." And so we carry on with this work undeterred by the response. Again, we're not driven by how popular programs are. We understand that those that God needs to understand this message, they'll be exposed to it. There's a lot of people that are going to be familiar with this. They'll recall hearing about the prophecies, what to expect. And of course, all of our materials, everything really focuses on the good news of the solutions that are coming through the return of Jesus Christ by God establishing his kingdom. That's something that I think people will remember as they're going through tribulation and thinking back on what they heard and what they did not respond to. God's work is expanding. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Trumpet magazine. In 2019, the Philadelphia Church of God spent more than $1 million to produce the Trumpet magazine. Included in that cost is the printing, the subscriptions we pay for artwork and pictures that are used in our publications, postage and freight. This doesn't include any of the other overhead costs. But $1 million spent to produce the physical print copy of the Trumpet magazine. That expense is about 10% increased over 2018, probably driven largely by the cost of paper and shipping. In 2019, we printed close to 2.5 million copies for distribution. 82% of those magazines are mailed to addresses in the United States. And while I'm sure many, if not most of you, listen to our programming online, you probably are avid subscribers, you could say, to our online content. Don't forget that you can and really should keep up with the print edition as well. There is a difference there. It's subtle, but there is a difference. Of course, we really want you to keep up with our online sites as we update those daily to keep you informed daily of what's taking place in the world around us. Now, I'd like to challenge our listeners, those of you that are hearing this program who don't subscribe to the Royal Vision magazine, I'd like to encourage you to request a copy. In 2019, this surprised me, the church spent only $36,000 to produce the Royal Vision magazine. That's a tremendous bargain. And it really is a profound magazine. It does carry a stronger spiritual message. It does dig into the Bible and prophecy more directly than the Trumpet magazine. And it's yours free of charge. We'd love to subscribe you to it. It's produced and comes out 6 times a year. If you are interested and not a subscriber already, send your request to td@kpcg.fm and we'll get you set up. 70% of those magazines, the Royal Vision magazine, are mailed to addresses in the United States. Each year we invest about $175,000 in our IT and IS departments, the computer department. That goes to pay for broadband, internet access, software licenses, hardware purchases, development and maintenance of our dozens of websites, the applications we've built, security infrastructure, all of that. We spend less than $200,000. Even some of the costs for operating KPCG are expensed into that particular department. And then we spread that expense out across the world because really the whole world benefits from that department. But I just wanted to draw attention to that because it's really it's a fantastic bargain. And God has really blessed his work with some wonderful professionals that keep us on the cutting edge. If you do attend services with the Philadelphia Church of God, you know that outside of our headquarters facility, outside of Edstone, occasionally, it's used for services. But by and large, if you attend with the Philadelphia Church of God, you meet in a rented hall. We invest the money in sounding this warning message and not in buying buildings for services around the world. And so last year, we spent about $447,000 renting halls for church services each week. That does not include any money we spend for the Feast of Tabernacles. And again, that's just in the United States. Those costs increased about 5% over the previous year. The campaigns, another large expense category for the church. And you've heard a lot about the campaigns. I will remind you that Stephen Fleury has upcoming campaigns scheduled for Birmingham, England, and Belfast, Ireland. And so it'll be exciting to get back into those campaigns. And it's something for us to pray about, to be excited about. I believe we have another online campaign that's being scheduled. But if you look back at our activity, it really has ramped up in the last couple of years. In 2018, we had 6 campaigns in the United States and Canada, and the church invested about $56,000 in those campaigns. Then in 2019, as you know, 16 different campaigns were conducted in the United States, 3 of them in Canada, and a number also in the UK, which isn't even counted into that number. The cost or the investment in those campaigns ramped up to $145,000. We've had tremendous results from those campaigns. There's a net increase in the number of people attending church services with the Philadelphia Church of God. We've had a nice increase from 2018. And I think a lot of that, or at least some of that, you could attribute to the campaigns. Just getting out there and really encouraging our listeners to dig in, to act, to be counted among those that are the seed in good ground that start to really bear fruit. It's a wonderful experience. It's something we encourage our listeners to follow through and to really make this a priority in their lives. You'll find that it's just deeply fulfilling and really gets to the core of the purpose of our existence. Jerusalem, another expense for us. In 2019, we actually had a net gain of $52,000, and that's thanks largely to the very generous donations for our efforts there that actually outstripped our costs in 2019. But going forward now, this year, we expect to have bigger operations in Israel. We'll be able to use some of that surplus. The previous year, in 2018, we invested over $210,000. We were involved in supporting a dig, an archaeological excavation in the Ophel. We sponsored exhibits, and so our costs had increased in 2018. And so looking forward to this coming year, we expect some very, very large things. I think you can kind of watch where God inserts money into his work, and there's a significant uptick in donations to our Jerusalem Fund. And that, at least to me, indicates that we'll see a lot more activity in Jerusalem in the coming year. Well, there is an important Bible principle that governs how this work of God is carried out. It is shocking to know that we're probably the only Christian church on the planet that follows this instruction. I think there's others that do to a limited degree. It's something that always kind of shocks the different business professionals that we work with. We offer everything free of charge. We don't solicit funds. We don't demand payment. We encourage people to obey God. God has certain laws in place that dictate what we are to do with our finances. And God does bless a cheerful, generous giver, somebody that wants to give and support. In Acts chapter 20 and verse 35, the Apostle Paul said this, "I have showed you all things," but he showed them by his example. "I've showed you all things how that so laboring you ought to support the weak and to remember the words of the Lord Jesus, how he said it is more blessed to give than to receive." That is the motivation that underpins the work of God. We are more blessed. And I think you could ask anybody that attends with us, anybody that supports this work. There is a reward, you could say. It's fulfilling to give to this work. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 8, Jesus Christ was directing his disciples. He told them to heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely you have received, freely give. Right? We come to this truth. We have the Bible available to us. All of this doctrine, all of this understanding and prophecy, all of it was given to us freely. And Christ dictates that we don't charge, we don't try to make profit off this. In fact, we do our best to spread it out, to give it to others that they may freely receive. You can study a dozen other scriptures. Romans 8:32 talks about how the Father gave his only Son and how he expects us to freely give everything. And so that's our modus operandi. That's what we do. We provide everything without cost. There's no obligation to the listeners. There's no harassing phone calls or follow-up. We encourage you to take in more of our offerings, to subscribe to the correspondence course, to watch our program, and to request the literature. That there's nothing that would make us happier than for you to do that. We don't conduct annual fundraisers for our materials like you might find on public broadcasting. Some of our brethren will go out and do fundraisers on their own to support different projects. But again, God doesn't call us to go out there and solicit funds from the general public. We're supported by generous donations from individuals all over the planet. Those that want to support it financially. It does cost the work quite a bit of money, as you've heard from some of these statistics. We spend over $20 million a year to conduct this work, and God has provided. He has blessed our income. 2019 has been an outstanding year. We will likely finish second to last year in total donation income received in the United States. I ran the numbers for Canada yesterday, and we had our strongest year ever, as far as I can tell, our strongest year ever in Canada, almost a 10% increase in donation income. The regional director, John McDonald, has been very aggressive with distributing the Trumpet magazine through a Subway newsstand program. We've expanded the waiting room program in Canada. We had three campaigns, as I mentioned. If it was up to him, we'd do even more this coming year. And God willing, we probably will. Now back to the U.S. income. We had increase in our Holy Day offerings, several other designated funds. Donations are really quite strong. We had, I just had a note here that how thankful I am that everybody is so generous. It really does make my job with the work very easy to budget and to work with what God gives us. He always provides. In 2018, which probably will outstrip our income for 2019, in 2018, we had a couple very large donations from estates, and that was fantastic. And of course, we don't budget, or you can't really budget for estate donations because you don't know when or if they'll come, how big they'll be. But I will say they've become much more consistent. Incidentally, it is a great way for you to support the work if you desire. Estate donations always provide, again, that extra little boost. I'm not pushing for people to contribute this way. But it is a great way to perhaps consider including God's work in your estate plans. If you have questions about that, we'd be happy to try to help you. Generally speaking, you just need to work with an estate planner and give them or express to them your intentions, and they'll help you to work that into your plans if that's your desire. We'll probably finish behind last year about 3%. But if you don't include the estates, and I don't want to sound like government reporting where, you know, they subtract this category to make things look really impressive. But I will say, if you don't look at the estate income, 2019 will probably be our strongest donation year ever. It will certainly outstrip 2018. And I think there was one year about a decade ago where we had an especially large donation. But we might even outstrip that. And so donations to the work have never been stronger. And I'm very confident that 2020 will continue in this very positive direction. We will be expanding into Israel. We'll be doing more on television. We'll continue with the campaigns. We have a ministerial conference scheduled. We have summer camps. In fact, there's a camp just wrapping up now in Australia. It's just really a very exciting work to be a part of. Please express your thanks to God for all that He provides in this work. Well, we're going to take a short break now, and when we return, I wanted to give you several reasons why you need to keep an eye on Russian President Vladimir Putin in 2020.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. In the summer of 1926, Herbert W. Armstrong asked himself, "Who am I? What am I? Why am I?" He tried to reason out the answer, but he couldn't. It was a mystery. Not long after that, he was confronted with a mind-disturbing challenge on the theory of evolution and the question of Sunday observance. After many months of virtually night and day intensive study, the answers were revealed with proof that was positive and absolute. These answers and many more are thoroughly explained in Mystery of the Ages, which is available to you at no cost or obligation. Time has proven Mystery of the Ages to be the most important book written in nearly 1,900 years. This world's humanity has been blinded to who, what, and why man is, how man appeared on Earth. Man has been mystified by his inability to solve his problems or find answers to the perplexing questions of mankind and the world he inhabits. All these mysteries were long ago revealed by the one supreme authority of all knowledge, but in a coded message, not allowed to be revealed and decoded until our time. In Mystery of the Ages, these great mysteries of life are thoroughly explained in vivid detail. Request your free copy of Mystery of the Ages today. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
Well, I love talking about the work of God, so I hope that didn't bore you too much with all the details. I know it doesn't bore you. It really is a very exciting work to be a part of. The incentives that God has in place really seem to be blessed. We serve a God that requires us to conduct the work in faith, especially from our leadership, from our pastor general. And God does back us up, and he allows some magnificent things, but I don't want to underestimate or allow you to forget the importance of faith. We have great strength in our individual and collective faith. But as Christ said, when he returns, it's going to be sorely lacking in this world outside of his church. And so we need to really build toward having that faith. We don't look at numbers. We don't budget based on, you know, income that's expected, and we have to, you know, try these different things to generate more income. God does provide. Now, I spent a little bit more time at the start of the program than I expected to. But again, it's just very exciting looking forward to 2020 and to know that God continues to promote the different things that we're doing. I didn't get into the educational programs too much in the explanation at the start of the of today's program, but I will just again comment how extraordinarily blessed we are to have Herbert W. Armstrong College and Imperial Academy. I'm blessed to have my children enrolled at both, two in the academy and one in the college. And I can tell you, I'm just absolutely so pleased and thankful with their education. It surpasses everything that I've received. It's very much in line with even this program. Stephen Flory is a regular instructor and speaks regularly to our middle and high school kids, our children, and to the college students, of course, as well. We have teachers that are so dedicated to the young people. My oldest daughter has really been blessed to have fantastic instruction in history, current events. She gets to work with some really impressive people. They just really built this keen interest and love for history and for Bible prophecy. I could call it names. I won't do that. All of our teachers are really special in that way. And she's been able to assist with some research for the editorial department. And I have a little confession. I'm not nearly as smart as my daughter, as I'm sure you've already assessed if you know me. But her teachers have really taught her so much. It is that seed that falls into receptive ground. I asked her to help me research a little bit for this program. And it was kind of funny how enthusiastic she was. She just loves geopolitics. I had to kind of slow her down to my speed to comprehend everything she was telling me. But it is really fantastic to see that kind of energy in our young people. A couple days ago, I guess it was about a week ago now, I was intrigued by President Donald Trump sharing intelligence with Russian President Vladimir Putin about a possible terrorist strike in St. Petersburg, Russia. This is a time of year where I guess we've all kind of grown accustomed to watching for terrorist activity. It does tend to come around the end of December, early January. Of course, January 16th stands out as a day that oftentimes we see some really significant geopolitical or spiritual events that really kind of dictate where things are going. And so I was watching this story about St. Petersburg, and honestly, not too much was said about exactly what was planned. I think it was two individuals, and I didn't really get that much understanding. So I wanted to investigate it a little bit. But then I was also kind of thrown off by, I guess I didn't realize, but Vladimir Putin is celebrating. He just passed his 20th year anniversary for holding power in Russia. I think it was on just the turn of the year. December 31st marked that anniversary. Now, I don't really like this source. It's from CNN, and it's a little bit longer clip, but it provides a good overview of Vladimir Putin's reign in Russia. So we'll play this clip now. Clip number one, please.
After nearly 20 years in power, Vladimir Putin continues to polarize, praising Russia's advances in hypersonic missile technology, which Moscow just announced it has deployed for the first time, and standing by President Trump as America's leader faces impeachment. Putin's reign began after his predecessor, the embattled and fatigued Boris Yeltsin, announced his resignation in his New Year's address on January 1st, 2000. Vladimir Putin, the new strong man in the Kremlin, immediately laid out his ambitious plans.
I've always said and will continue to say that the Russian state must be strong.
But his presidency got off to a rocky start. He was heavily criticized for his handling of the sinking of the Kursk nuclear submarine just a few months after he took office, the disaster killing all sailors on board. Faced with public anger, Putin didn't immediately return from his holidays to manage the crisis. He also escalated the brutal war in Chechnya, eventually crushing the breakaway republic's rebellion at an immense human and material cost. And Putin made clear he was going to be tough on terrorism.
We'll whack them in the outhouse.
Russian special forces raiding a Moscow theater taken over by Chechen rebels in 2002, leading to the deaths of more than 130 hostages. While more than 330 hostages were killed when Moscow's special forces raided a school taken hostage by extremists in Beslan, southern Russia, in 2004. Meanwhile, Russia's economy and overall stability started improving, thanks in part to high international oil prices, boosting the president's popularity. After finishing two terms, Putin had reached the limit under Russia's constitution. His solution? He swapped jobs with Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev for 4 years. Medvedev then changed the constitution, extending the terms from 4 to 6 years before Putin's return as president. But even while he was prime minister, it was always clear that Putin was the man in charge, and the West was put on notice. Russia was returning as a force in international politics. In 2008, the Russian military invaded Georgia, occupying South Ossetia. Vladimir Putin was re-elected to his third term as president in 2012. But not all Russians were happy. Massive protests engulfed the streets of Moscow, Russian authorities crushing the opposition movement despite international condemnation. Vladimir Putin's second stint as president has been defined by confrontation with the West. In 2014, after an uprising unseated the pro-Russian leader of Ukraine, the Kremlin invaded and then annexed Crimea. Russia is also accused of fueling and aiding the uprising in eastern Ukraine, which has led to thousands of deaths, and the downing of a commercial airliner, killing everyone on board. International investigators blame a missile fired from Russian military equipment for the tragedy. The Kremlin has remained defiant.
We think there is no proof. Everything that was presented shows nothing. We have our own version, but unfortunately, nobody wants to listen to us.
Russian forces are supporting Syrian President Bashar al-Assad against a rebellion in the Middle Eastern nation. Western countries saying Russia's heavy bombardment and frequent targeting of civilian areas amount to war crimes. And Putin's Russia is accused of directly meddling in Western nations' affairs, including a broad effort aimed at swaying the U.S. presidential election in 2016 in favor of now-president Donald Trump. Putin denying he meddled, but acknowledging he wanted Donald Trump to win.
Because he was talking about normalizing U.S.-Russia relations.
But normalizing relations seems out of the question after Britain accused Russia of using chemical weapons to poison former double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter in Salisbury in 2018. Russia once again dismissing the evidence. Nearly 20 years after taking power, Vladimir Putin maintains a strong grip on the presidency, having largely marginalized Russia's opposition. But international sanctions and isolation, along with a weak economy, have sent his popularity into a nosedive, as some Russians have grown wary of their long-standing leader.
That was a longer clip, of course, but I thought it did a good job just highlighting all of the activity that surrounded Mr. Putin in the past 20 years. As was pointed out in that clip, and as he passes his 20-year anniversary, his time as president is limited. The Russian Constitution only allows for two consecutive terms. And so come May 2024, constitutionally, President Putin is required to step down. Now, there's some interesting options for him to extend his power, and that's what I wanted to discuss with the time remaining. And again, I have to apologize to my daughter. She gave me just piles and piles of information. And really, I think this is going to be a very big story as we go through 2020. It's very interesting to watch how the political maneuvering is setting things up. And as I said, it's kind of a complicated story. But let me take you back just a few days to Stephen Fleury addressing an article that was written by Richard Palmer that appeared on thetrumpet.com. The title of that article was America Slams the Brakes on Russian-German Gas Pipeline. This is from December 24th, 2019. It's on thetrumpet.com, written by Richard Palmer. And Stephen Fleury talked about that headline, and he talked about the Wall Street Journal that explained the sanctions that the United States, that Donald Trump had signed into law that effectively stopped the construction project of Nord Stream 2, which is a gas pipeline that flows from basically the St. Petersburg area through the Baltic Sea, or the Baltic Sea. Got to get my geography right. It flows on then down and connects back to land in Germany. It bypasses Poland. It bypasses Belarus. It is a unique way for the Russians to get gas directly into Germany, and it's kind of upset NATO. It's upset the United States. This halting of it now has upset the Germans and the Russians. And so it is something that I'm sure we'll be hearing quite a bit more about. It's a 2 billion euro project. And as is pointed out, it's mostly finished. And again, this has divided all of these different nations. Everybody's angry with what's taken place. I'd like to play to you a clip from Stephen Fleury's program from December 24th, where he addressed what the significance is of this new law put into place by Donald Trump. So clip number five, please.
Doesn't this demonstrate just how powerful and effective a siege, an economic siege, can be? Here's the United States of America. While it still has some power, there's certainly a temporary resurgence. But here's President Trump saying, if you don't pull out of this deal, then we're going to slap sanctions on you. And as we know from Bible prophecy, this is a power that other nations are going to use as well. Now, for them, it's going to take a coalition of sorts. And we see that from Isaiah 23. Germany, as angered as Germany is by this, they're looking at the power of the United States saying, we want that kind of power. We want to be able, in some ways, they've had it in smaller ways, the way that they've imposed their will on Greece and so on. But still, they're looking at this saying, this is the kind of power that we want. And we know from Bible prophecy, this is the kind of power that Europe will soon get. You think about some of the other effects of all of this or what will come from it. Surely this is going to strengthen the tie between Berlin and Moscow, and other nations for sure are taking note.
It's a great assessment of what's going on. These are complicated geopolitical events. And CNN was wrong, I think, in their assessment that Vladimir Putin would have rather had Donald Trump in office because of actions just like this. Donald Trump would respond to geopolitical crises with passing law that does stop the threats to the United States, that does promote Western ideas perhaps more. I think we know from experience from the previous administration that the likely response would be to counter Russian and German aggression with blankets and with MREs. Donald Trump, by the signature of a pen, as Richard Palmer brought out, has caused major ripples that the Russians now have to overcome. It's just outlandish for the liberals to somehow accuse the Trump administration of, you know, cozying up to the Russians when you just look at the fruits of what's going on. What a crazy narrative. I won't get distracted with that. But let me connect this now with what might be happening that Vladimir Putin is perhaps behind as he's looking to stretch his power. It, again, is a truly interesting story. 2 days after our article, Mr. Palmer's article about stopping Nord Stream 2, 2 days after Stephen Fleury had his Trumpet Daily radio program, on December 26th, the Washington Examiner ran a piece entitled, quote, "Cutting Each Other's Throats. Allies Fear Russia Will Annex Belarus to Save Putin's Life." Let me quote to you several quotes from this article. It's very interesting. This is just, again, from a few days ago, less than a week. The article begins by saying Western allies fear that Russia will gain sovereignty over Belarus, a former Soviet satellite state that could help preserve Vladimir Putin's grip on power and sharpen Kremlin threats against NATO members. Putin is trying to finalize the implementation of a union treaty that the two countries signed back in 1998, and that it's just gone on too slowly for Vladimir Putin. So he's extending economic pressure against Belarus. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit here, and perhaps we'll come back and have another program to dig into this more deeply. I see I'm running out of time. But Vladimir Putin is taxing the revenue that the Belarusians gain by allowing oil to transit their country through pipelines. And it's probably one of the greatest sources, if not the greatest source of economic activity for the Belarusians. And Vladimir Putin now is taxing it. This analyst said, "I think this mild annexation will just happen, probably next year. To be honest, my personal feeling is that it's already a done deal." That was a Slovakian or a Slovak Republic analyst that made that statement. This article says, "Such a maneuver could end Lukashenko's tenure as the last dictator in Europe, while providing Putin with a political life preserver. Currently, presidential term limit law requires him to leave the Kremlin in 2024. A union with Belarus would allow him to circumvent those limits and continue to rule the revised Russian state pending a new election, which he is expected to win." A little further down in the article, again going back to that analyst, it says, "Overall, since the Soviet Union collapsed, we have not drifted apart too much from each other." Sorry, that was a statement by Lukashenko, basically saying that the Belarusians, don't even know how to say that, and the Russians, they're really kind of lockstep together. He was meeting with President Putin in St. Petersburg. Again, that's where a terrorist act was just thwarted. I think all of this is kind of tied together. St. Petersburg is, again, essentially the headwaters, generally speaking, of Nord Stream 2. And so you find all of this activity starting to tie together. Now, of course, there's protesters in Belarus, and it really is a risky prospect to protest Vladimir Putin and Lukashenko, but they're doing it. They said it seems in 2020, or it says, excuse me, they said it seems 2020 will be a critical year for Belarus's future and independence, and these protests are not the last. And so you find this very interesting geopolitical pot starting to boil. says the Baltic states that are in between Kaliningrad and Belarus are also probably the weakest link in NATO. Belarus is very far to the west, so the Russians can use it to project power. And they had done so historically as the Soviet Union. When Belarus was under their umbrella, they staged some of their most sophisticated intercontinental ballistic missiles, the SS-25. They stationed those. About 25% of their inventory was staged in Belarus. It's about 600 miles. Belarus is about 600 miles closer to Europe. This huge missile, it has a half megaton capacity. It was quite a threat to Europe. Now, Kaliningrad, as this article points out, is a Russian enclave that Moscow has controlled since the Cold War. And Kaliningrad, if you just look at a map, again, it's over there. It's just north of Poland. But this is, as this article points out, it's just been stockpiled with Russian military assets. And again, it creates this fear for Poland and Lithuania in particular, but all the Baltic states, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, they could easily be cut off from NATO if Russia was to control Belarus. This article finishes by saying it's a bit too late, to be honest with you, because the country is completely dependent on Russia, this analyst said. If something were to happen, like what's happening in the Ukraine, I'm not sure the population would resist. So that's one of the ways that Vladimir Putin can stay in power. And if he takes this action to annex Belarus, as he did Georgia, as he did Crimea, it also puts geopolitical pressure on Ukraine, as it kind of surrounds that territory as well. And so he preserves his power. It's also a way for him to strengthen Russia. It weakens NATO. It provides just a hugely important buffer between Germany and Russia. And as these analysts point out, the deal is pretty much already a done project. It's almost guaranteed to go through. This would allow President Putin to bypass the constitutional limit that puts constraint on his reign of power. Belarus is a very important country to Russia for the gas pipelines that flow into Europe. In fact, more gas flows through Belarus than any other nation. And now you start to look at Donald Trump tying up the Nord Stream 2 project, and Russia sees greater need to control Belarus. The Russians are committed to Nord Stream 2 and will likely work their way around some of the delays there. But Belarus now comes into focus. If you just look at history a little bit, you'll find that Belarus is part of the North European plain. It is the gateway for the Holy Roman Empire to invade Russia. And so, again, controlling that space by the Russians instead of NATO is of utmost importance to Vladimir Putin. Well, I have just one more clip that I want to play. This is from a Kia David program that was broadcast 15 years ago. And it's entitled Russia and China in Prophecy. It's just a short clip, but it gives you some context into what is taking place in this region. So clip 3, please.
But think about this for a moment. What was it that really wrecked the Soviet Union? What caused them to collapse? Well, a bad economy, a weak economy. But now Mr. Putin is correcting that problem, and I think you need not forget, or you should not forget, that he also was a leader inside the KGB when the communists were in power. So I suspect he was trained for such deals. Wouldn't you think so?
So there's the Pastor General Gerald Fleury talking about Russia 15 years ago, just 5 years into Putin's troubled leadership of the nation, and calling attention to the weakening economy. Putin has done a lot to change that. Oil, of course, even as CNN pointed out, oil is the most valuable and plenteous natural resource that gives life to the Russian economy. It also gives them stranglehold power over Europe. Now, I think our readers are familiar with, they know that Vladimir Putin is a prophesied end time personality. He's the Prince of Rosh. We have a booklet that proves that point to you. We have a reprint series, more than a dozen articles to give you an understanding of the Prince of Rosh. Richard Palmer sent out a trumpet brief on December 31st. It's been referred to already in some of the programming here on KPCG. And basically, it was a summary of 20 landmark articles from Gerald Fleury. And on that list, the third article down is Vladimir Putin the prophesied Prince of Rosh? That was printed in February 2014. The summary that Richard puts here says, at the close of 2013, Russian President Vladimir Putin rocked the world with his invasion of Ukraine. The U.S. Secretary of State at the time declared that Russia was acting, quote, in a 19th century fashion, end quote. He just couldn't understand this incredible act of aggression. Others were less shocked. But still, there is a critical element of this story that even the world's best analysts don't understand. This article gives you that missing element. And that's perhaps a great place for me to start to wrap up this program, to encourage you to go back to that categorization, those 20 important articles, to listen to Trumpet Hour from yesterday, to go back and study our resources that educate you about history and prophecy, that help you understand the significance of these events and ties them all together. As we get into 2020, we do need to keep our eye on Vladimir Putin. We do need to watch as he works to strengthen or to preserve his political future. We know from the Bible that he will preserve it. So there's a lot of exciting events for us to watch. It's exciting to see how God is blessing this work, as I talked about in the first half of today's program. God does intend for us to declare all of this through print, on the internet, through video, through broadcasting. He is providing the means to magnify this message. So as we start 2020, make sure you invest time listening, watching, and reading what is produced. Be that seed in good ground. Keep an eye on Vladimir Putin in 2020, and specifically, watch Belarus. Well, I'm sorry to be so rushed. I certainly do thank you for listening. We encourage you to send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. So have a wonderful day, and I believe Stephen Fleury will be back with you tomorrow.